For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Hey, welcome everyone. We're going to begin again from chapter 5. I was just thinking, you know, what a remarkable person Esther was. You know, that she was born an orphan. She lost her parents. And she's taken into the king's palace. And he's a drunkard and a murderer. And she's living under a very dangerous circumstance where the previous king, the queen, was executed unreasonably. And now she's called upon to risk her life and make a rule to go in with the king when everybody knows that if you go in without being called, that was clear, that it was instant death. And she doesn't hesitate. And she has the presence of mind to do what's right. Like Mordechai had told her not to tell people that she was Jewish. There must have been a lot of pressure to get her to reveal who she was, what people she was. She didn't say a word. And now we're going to see that she waits for the right moment. Like she invites Haman and Ahasuerus to come, somehow she senses the timing isn't right, so she invites them again. It's so interesting. Like she just waits to see when the right moment will come. And this is what we were discussing last week. Why did she invite them again? What was the purpose of that? Perhaps she felt that Ahasuerus at first didn't want to, was upset with her for coming in uncalled. So maybe it wasn't. Sometimes when someone's upset with you, that's not the time to ask a favor. Even though he said, whatever you like, you know, till half the. But initially, when she came in, he was filled with rage. You know, how dare she come in when she was not supposed to? And he turned around and handed her the scepter. The Medrash says the angel almost forced him to do that, whether he wanted to or not. But somehow she sensed it wasn't the time yet. With what she knew was that if the Jewish people were behind her, and if they prayed, then it would be the time. And so she had everybody praying for her. So let's begin that chapter again. This is like the supreme moment. And it was on the third day. Vitilbash Esther Malchus. It says that Esther, she dressed up. You could understand it to mean that she wore her royal robe, but I imagine she always wore her royal robe because she was the queen. What else would she wear? Vitilbash means like she prepared herself to meet the king, to speak to Hashem. V'tamad v'chatzer beis hamelech hapnimis, and she stopped as she stood outside the king's chamber. So there's a capital in Tehillim, a chapter in Tehillim that is attributed to Esther. As she's waiting outside thinking, what's going to happen? Is he going to kill me? Is he going to save my people? What's going to be? That she wrote a whole chapter in Tehillim praying to Hashem to help her at this moment. And it seems like also that she was very weak. If you fast 3 days, that'll do it to you. You know, it's like she was being held up by the two people that were chambermaids that were going with her. So she pauses. V'hamelech Yoshev al kiseh, the king is sitting there on the royal throne. V'veisamah nocha pesle, and he's facing the other way. And the Medrash says that the guards were already dividing up her jewelry. They said, you know, here she comes again, says, well, we're going to kill her. I want the crown, I want the scepter, I want this. That's how sure they were that she was going to be executed. Because if you remember, Ahasuerus made a big point about this, that the women aren't supposed to come unless they're called, and you can't come. And, you know, he made a big point about that. But when he saw Esther Amalka, Omedes Bechatzin Nosachin Be'enov, she found favor in his eyes. But Yoshin HaMelech Esther, whenever it says find, it means that it wasn't automatic that it was going to happen, but somehow something happened and she found favor in his eyes, and he extended the gold scepter in his hand, Betikav Esther Betikav Rosh, and Esther came near and she touched the top of the scepter. But Yomer Lo HaMelech, Malacha Esther, Hamalcha. So the king was trying to figure this out. What does she want? Why is she coming in like this? Everybody knew you didn't come in without being called. What was she risking her life for? So he says to her, what do you want? What is your request? I'll give you up to half the kingdom. It's a funny expression, like, I'll give you all of it, I'll give you half of it. Like, what is the... So some people say that the land, if you cut the 127 countries in half, it ends up right in the middle is Jerusalem. And that he was saying, I'll let you do anything except rebuild the temple. That was the... Because that was one of the things that had been stopped, and that the... maybe he suspected she was Jewish. It's hard to say. Four. But Tamar Esther Ima Amalek Tov. So Esther always, she knows how to speak. Like she, if it's good for the king, if you like this idea, you know, she knew that that was the way to convince. If you think it's a good idea, let the king come with Haman to the party, Yesher Sisalam. Now they all ask about this, why she invited Haman. Like you would think that he's the last one you want to come to the party. Some people say that she wasn't sure that she could get the king to change his mind about Haman. Because the Haman was the one who the king trusted more than anyone in the whole country. But she had another thought, which was maybe get the king jealous of Haman. Get the king to think that maybe she and Haman were on the same side, and she was willing to allow that to happen, which would have meant that she and Haman would have been killed. But that would have saved the Jewish people. So some people say she was trying to make the king think that she and Haman were in cahoots. The Omar HaMelech, Maher, so all right, quick. The king was very curious. You know, here's this queen who never tells him very much. All of a sudden she risks her life and she comes and she wants Haman. So he says, all right, hurry up, get Haman. And right away they come, Elamishta Shesis Esther, to the party. And these parties are always drinking parties. This king really liked to drink. The Omar HaMelech, Esther, Mamishta Yayim. So he has a few drinks. So he repeats his request. My wish I would say, what is your request? And you know what? I promise you I'll give it. There seems like there's... People have different requests. There's sometimes what they think they'll get and what they're hoping they'll get. And so he's saying, tell me both. Tell me what's on your mind. I'll give you up until half. The time Esther v'tomar. So she says, you know what I want? I want you to come again tomorrow. She knew how to play him. He has him very curious or very nervous, as we're going to see. He's not going to sleep that night, this king. She says, well, if you think it's a good idea, if I find favor in your eyes, and if you think it's a good idea, if you really want to do what I want, you'll come again tomorrow. You'll come to the party I'm making tomorrow. And that's what she said. So it's really interesting. The king was trying to figure out what was going on. Haman took it as a compliment. Haman was sure that this was the pinnacle of power, that he's invited to the queen's special parties. So Haman at this moment is at the top of the world. He thinks that this is the sign that everything's going good for him. Verse 9, the Yetzer Haman beyomahu sameach v'tov lev. Haman is as happy as could be. He's drunk, he's happy. And then, Keros Haman es Mordechai, and when Haman sees Mordechai sitting, Bishar HaMelech, right there by the gate, V'lo kam, and he didn't get up, V'lo zaza, he didn't move, V'yimale Haman al Mordechai chema. So this is the best day in Haman's life. Haman is happy as could be. He's not missing anything. But there's one person that doesn't bow down to him, and that's it. He goes in a wrath. And I think I talked about this a little bit before. Haman is a destructive force that exists in the world called Haman. That's the force of Amalek. And that is that there are times in life that everything is good and something happens and a person gets angry over something. It's like a wrath that comes over him, and it's a destructive kind of thing. And it's just something over something silly. You know, here he's called to the banquet with the queen. He has wealth. He has family. He has power. Everybody's bowing down to him. And one thing doesn't go his way, and that's it. He's fit to be tied. That's Haman. And unfortunately, we all work that way sometimes. We all work that way, that sometimes something that we expect or want doesn't go the way we want it to. And that just throws us off kilter. And if we're not careful, like there's even sometimes a person goes in a rage. And then sometimes later on you think, what was I? That was just a minor little thing, you know. There's so many things going right. I just, this one thing didn't go the way I wanted. I had to go in a rage. But that's Haman. He kind of spoils the party for us. If something doesn't happen the way we want, somebody doesn't bow to us, something doesn't go according to our wishes, and we're just filled with wrath. And sometimes we have to tell ourselves it's only whatever it is, you know. Don't be so upset. Don't lose it, you know. But that's the power of Haman, that sometimes people, they go in a rage over nothing. Vesapik Haman v'yavo abeso, and Haman is infuriated. He comes to his house. The yishuk v'yaves o'avav, and he decides to have a meeting. He calls all of his loved ones, and he calls Esiris Ishto. I wonder if he loved her or didn't. He calls his loved one and his wife. But it means he called his friends and advisors. But Yisaper Lam Haman es Kavod Oshro. And Haman, he tells them all about how honored he is and how rich he is. I'm on verse 11. Verovanov, he has so many sons. That's called a Shagidlo HaMelech. And he tells them all the honors he has. Vesa Shenasa L'Sarim. And how he's greater than all the other ones and all the other servants. He's going on and on. Verse 12, Yomar Haman Aflo Hevi Esther, and he says, you know, not only all that, but the queen had a party for just two people, me and the king. Hamalka Imamalka Mishta Shasisa. It's so interesting that she was able to disguise from him that was the way she really felt too. You know, Esther was, you know, just she had him convinced that he was show respect to Haman, you know, invite him to the party. And not only did I go to today's party, I'm called to tomorrow's party. So Haman is like going on and on about all the honors he has, all the greatness he has. And then verse 13, and you know what? It's not worth anything to me. All of this is worth nothing. Why? Because I see that one Jew sitting over there, my anger boils, and I can't stand it, and it's not worth it to me. And that's the power of Haman. Verse 14, V'tamalo Zeresh Ishto, and Zeresh his wife, the Kolah of Yasu, so they give him advice. You know what? Somebody bothers you, just take him out and kill him. Yasu Eitz Gavoa Chamishimama, make a high piece of wood, 50 yamas high. So there's a question why they needed to advise him of how to kill Mordechai, and why did they do it this way? So some people felt that they were very superstitious, and they were looking for some new method or new way to kill Mordechai. Like they knew the previous king had tried to put the Jews into a fiery furnace. And they had thrown Hanani, Mishael, Azariah into the furnace, and that didn't work. And Paro had tried to throw the Jewish babies in the water, and that didn't work. So now this was Amalek, the enemy of the Jews, was trying to defeat Mordechai, so he was thinking, you know, let's try hanging. Maybe that method will work. And so perhaps that's what he wanted.
Right. Mm-hmm. Why 50 cubits high?
There must be a significance to it, but I don't remember. That is interesting that the size was important. I did see that he wanted to, while he was at the banquet in the palace, he wanted to be able to watch him hanging. That was what he, so he wanted one that was apparently like high enough so that he could really enjoy himself at this party. This is what wickedness is, that they enjoy watching, you know, people hang. Baboker, and in the morning, Omer Lamelech, and just, you know, you're such good buddies with the king, just tell him, just hang the guy up, hang the Mordechai Olos, Ubayim Lamelech Alamishta, and then you'll be able to come to the party, and you'll really have a good time. So you just killed someone. Semantically, this is the, in the Middle East, they're happy to kill people. That's the problem there, it's just part of the culture that they... So that was the advice that they gave me. Yeah.
I'm wondering how long Esther had been married or with Ahasuerus when all this was going on.
Several years at least.
Okay. She seemed to know how to play him.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did. Right, that's right. She just, you know, considering the situation she was in, she just, it is very interesting, you know, how she... And she, even with Mordechai, it's very interesting. At first, Mordechai tells her what to do, and then she starts telling him what to do. If you remember, she didn't want to go. And, and Mordechai says, it's not the time to be quiet, and if you're going to do this, you and your family be lost. And he was very strict with it. And then she tells him, you know what, gather all the Jews, make a fast for 3 days. And So what they say is that once a person decides that they're going to take risks for the Jewish people, so then Hashem is on their side, and then everybody has to listen to them, so to speak. Like, once she decided that she was going to do this, so everybody else stands back, like even Mordechai, whatever she wants. Like, according to most people, the time of the year was Passover, and when she said to fast, she was basically telling people to skip the Seder that year. She was saying, forget about the Seder this year. This is to let you know that if this doesn't work, it's going to be the end of the Jewish people. And so she actually told Mordechai, tell everybody forget about Passover this year. There's not going to be a Jewish people next year if this doesn't work. So everybody has to fast for 3 days. And some people talk about how the people of that time accepted the leaders. Like, imagine if someone would say today, okay, everybody, forget about Passover. Nobody would listen to them. You know,
I don't know.
I guess a lot less cooking if we had to forget about TV.
That's why
Anyway, this is what Haman wanted to do. The Yitav Adav, Haman saw, that's a great idea. But Yas ate, and he set up the wood, he set up the tree. So now we get to chapter 6, page 36.
Haman unaware of Esther and Mordecai's relationship?
Yes, he was unaware. Mm-hmm. He might have been suspicious, but he was unaware.
When did they have as a child? They had a son.
Yeah, that was later. Yeah.
Later?
Mm-hmm. So, because you're right, because if Esther was close with Mordechai, why would he try to hang Mordechai thinking that he was going to meet the queen? It could be that he was so secure now in his relationship with Esther that he felt that he could go do that. You know, it's interesting. Many people say this is like, the beginning of the Megillah is very sad and very scary. You know, there's this huge threat that hangs over the Jewish people, and it doesn't sound good. You know, the Haman makes this decree and he's going to wipe out the Jewish people and he's the power. And up until this point in the Megillah, it's like there's a build-up, and now begins the salvation. Like it all begins in the middle of the night. The king can't sleep. You know, the some people say that Hashem like heard the prayers of the Jewish people at this point, where it says that when it says the king couldn't sleep, it meant Hashem couldn't sleep. He felt that now was time to put the Jewish people at ease, and now was time for Haman's downfall. But history moves on moments like these. It's very interesting.
I would think he couldn't sleep because this, all of a sudden, what's with these parties and the way she approached me?
Mm-hmm. Right.
He probably didn't have much of a conscience, but there had to be something there.
Very good. So the Medrash says like that. The Medrash says that he was thinking, why is she making these parties? What is she going to ask? And why did she invite Haman? And what if there's a plot against me? Because in those days you had to worry, you know, people were constantly being assassinated, and the queen is inviting the prime minister. And so what he was wondering, though, is usually you reward someone if they tell about a plot. And he had no information about why Esther was doing this. So he was asking himself, why aren't people coming forward to give me the spy information? Have we not rewarded people that have told us, you know, about plots and things? So that made him pull out the book about to have the book read to him. So very good. But Lailahu, and if you actually read if you listen for the tune changes a little bit when I talk about that night. It's almost like an alarm is ringing. Nadada shnas hamelech, like the king is just, he can't sleep. It's very interesting. If you can't sleep, you read something boring. You know, bring out the records. Bring out the meeting records. So, the Yomar, that'll put him to sleep. You know, they bring out the records. That'll put anybody to sleep. Bring the records. And it's almost like they read themselves. They brought them out the records. These were certain records that were kept of the events. And it was written there, and it was found. It was almost like nobody even knew about it, that Mordechai was the one that had saved him from the plot to kill him by Bigson and Seresh. Shnei Serisim, and these were two guards who were part of the royal secret service. Asher Bikshu Lishlach Yabim, and they wanted to kill the king. So that's what he found. It surprised him. So the king said, Ma Nasa Yachadula Mordechai Oseh. He said, what reward was given to Mordechai for this? You know, if there's a loyal person who's by the king's gate who will tell me if anybody's coming against me, what would the reward be for that? So when you think about this, you know, here Haman makes up his mind that night that he's going to ask permission to hang Mordechai. And that very night, Achashverosh can't sleep, and he reads about what had happened months earlier, how Mordechai had saved his life. So like you think about, well, it's just an accident, you know, but this is like the exact moment where Haman is going to come and ask permission to hang Mordechai. Achashverosh decides, look what happened with this Mordechai. And the Yomar Nari HaMelech Mishrosav, and the servants of the king said, Lo Nasi Imo Davar, nothing had been done. The Yomar HaMelech. So at that exact same moment, he sees somebody outside. Now Haman also couldn't sleep, because he was so anxious to get rid of Mordechai, he woke up early in the morning and wanted to be there first thing in the morning to get rid of Mordechai so that he could enjoy himself at the party. So he's before the crack of dawn, he's up at the king's palace, and the king is up because he couldn't sleep. Amar Melech, mi b'chatzer. So the king says, who's out there? Who's in the yard? Haman ba, and there's Haman, Beis HaMelech, Hachitzonim. Leimar HaMelech, and Haman is coming to say to the king, Litzus is Mordechai. He has this great idea. He wants to hang Mordechai Aleitha, Shehechula. And he even got the tree ready, the wood, the big piece of wood ready. V'yomar Nara HaMelech, Elav, Hinei Haman Amei Becha. Haman's out there. V'yomar HaMelech, Yavo. So the king said, let him come in. Let's see what he wants. Verse 6. V'yavo Haman. Now, like during what you were saying earlier, is that he was wondering if Haman or Esther was plotting against him. And that's why he couldn't sleep. And that's why he wanted to know why none of the security detail had told him who was plotting against him. So that, some people say that's really what he's thinking over here. He wants to know, is Haman trying to get power? That's why he's testing him. Like to see if Haman wants to wear the king's robes. Is that, in a certain way, he wants to see if Haman, and so Haman is going to fall right into the trap over here. And this is also, now it's the king's time to play with Haman. So the king says to Haman, now do you think the king knew Haman well enough to know that Haman would think this was him? Right? So he says to the king, he says, what could I do for the one who the king wishes to honor? And until now, all the honors had gone to Haman. Right? So the king is thinking, you know what, let me see, this guy Haman, what is he after? What's his final game? What is he trying to get more position? Is he trying to take over the kingdom? So Haman falls right into it. Why? V'yomar Haman b'libo. Now, again, we're saying that Haman is, we said that Haman is a bad person, but he's also a metaphor for evil. The evil person says in his heart that, thinks he's the most deserving person in the whole world. Right? That's, what does Haman say? Somebody's going to be honored. There's nobody in the whole kingdom who's more honorable than me. What did he do? Did he help the poor? Did he do something good for the country? No, but in his mind, he says, there's nobody more worthy of something in the whole world than me. That's the way a Haman thinks. We don't think that way. We're very thankful for what we have. You find that by the forefathers and the mothers, when Hashem promised them good, they said, I don't deserve it. What am I? What have I done compared to Hashem's kindness? But Haman is the opposite. He thinks if there's anything good in the world, Haman says in his heart, nobody's more deserving than me. I must deserve it all. Verse 7. The man who the king wishes to show honor, Yavu lavish malchus, let him come with royal garments. Asher lavish bal melech, and let him wear the king's robes. Besus and the king's horse. Asher rochov lav, the king rides. Only the king wears these things. And you can cast them out, and he should get to wear the royal crown. Most people say this is where the king began to suspect Haman, because he's talking about wearing the royal crown, and he's clearly thinking of himself. But nasa lavush besus, and let the clothing and the horse, ayat ish misori melech. And he says, the one who should be in charge of this should be somebody important. A very important official should carry these robes and the king's horse, the hilbit, and they themselves should clothe the man. In other words, they should make a big ceremony and have like royal officials, the top officials of the country, should put the royal robes on this person. Clearly, Haman is trying to seize power. And they should dress him. And this is going to fall back because who do you think is going to be chosen to have to dress Mordechai? It's going to be Haman. And they'll put him on the horse, and they should do this in front of the city. And these royal ministers will personally have to call out, this will be done to the one in which the king wants to honor. So this is the picture that Haman painted for himself of the great honor that he would have, and the great... So now comes Haman's first surprise. Vayomer HaMelech laHaman, and the king says to Haman, Mahir, quickly, kach es halavush, take the clothing, vesesus, and the horse, exactly like you said, and you know what? V'yasa came to Mordechai Yehudi, and do that to Mordechai the Jew, and the which one? Hayoshi b'shar HaMelech, the one that's sitting there. Altifu dami, and you better not leave anything out. Some people say Haman was trying to say, well, maybe we shouldn't do this. Now that Haman found out who was supposed to get the honor, he was thinking, well, you know what? Let's just give Mordechai some money. Maybe he doesn't want the king's robes. Maybe he doesn't need the king's horse. Maybe I don't need to do it. So the king shouted at him and said, don't you dare leave anything out. And that's the... was quite a surprise to Haman, who was woken up, you know, probably had put the tree up, you know, gotten the noose and the... The Medrash says that he actually tried on the noose. He was like, you know, tying the knot, getting it ready to hang Mordechai up. And he comes first thing in the morning, and now he's told that he has to lead this Mordechai through a parade through the city. And he personally has to call out, this is what's going to happen to the one who the king wishes to honor. It's such a funny thing when you think about it. He takes the clothing, Veshasus, and the horse. The Yalbesh is Mordechai, and he personally dresses Mordechai. The Medrash says that it was one of these big horses that were difficult to climb, and Mordechai was fasting, and he said, I can't get up. I can't climb up the horse. If you've ever been on a horse, they're hard. You have to know how to, you know, throw one foot over. So Haman had to bend down, and Mordechai stepped on him to get on the horse.
Yeah. Sure,
but it gets worse for Haman. The equal of fun of and Haman calls out, this will be done to the one who the king wishes to honor. We're going to see something interesting later. There's a prayer that in the Shoshanas Yaakov that we say, and it says the Jews were happy when they saw the Tchelis Mordechai, the tzitzis, the blue wool of Mordechai. So they asked the question, what is that talking about, the blue wool? So the Medrash says that when they had this parade, first of all, the news didn't travel the way it does now. All of a sudden, people see somebody wearing the king's robes from a distance. They didn't know who that was. In fact, Haman's own daughter thought it was Haman in the king's robes, right? They see someone wearing the king's robes and wearing the king's hat and the king's crown and on the king's horse. And they had no idea who that was. Somebody's out there announcing, this is what's done to the one who the king wishes to honor. But you know what? They see sticking out of the king's robes, the tzitzis. They see the blue wool. Then they knew who it was. So when they saw the tchelis, when they saw the tzitzis hanging out of the king's robe, then they were happy because they realized that there's only one person who it could be if there's tchelis coming out. But Haman's daughter didn't know that about the talus with the blue string sticking out. So the Medrash says that during the parade, and she saw that the caller was a high official who was calling out, so she assumed that high official was Mordechai. Because the tradition we have, Mordechai is constantly at the king's gate, and so was Haman. They were like two important officials. So she sees somebody calling out, and she knew that they were trying to humiliate Mordechai, so she assumed that Mordechai had to call out, this is the one who they wish to honor. So the Medrash says she took her chamber pot and she dumped it on Haman, thinking that it was Mordechai as they passed by. But Haman, when he sees, you know, feels the drops coming on him from the chin, looks up and he sees that it was his own daughter that dumped this on his head. So she, when she saw her father, that she had accidentally dumped her chamber pot on her father, she was so shaken up that she jumped off the roof or she fell. So Haman was... this shook him up even more because he was that's hinted to in this pasuk here on verse 12. It says, "Yesha Mordechai Shara Melech." Mordechai went back afterwards after the parade. V'Haman, and it says Haman nidchas al beiso. he went like very despondent to his house, although in mourning. Now, why would he be mourning? Because he lost his daughter. V'chafoy rosh, and he had something on his head. It doesn't say what it was. The kids all know what it is that he had on his head because the chamber pot got dumped on his head. So this is when somebody's at a high moment and then quickly they at a low moment. This was quite a fall. You know, that morning he woke up thinking he's going to the queen's party tonight and he has so much honor and he was so everything was great and he was going to get that Mordechai. And the next thing he knows, Mordechai is honored, and he's the one who has to call out to honor Mordechai. And then his own daughter, many people say that he advised to get rid of Vashti because he was always hoping to get his own daughter in that position. And so then this own daughter dumps the chamber pot on his head, and he loses her. And this would have been quite embarrassing to have that stuff poured on his head. Somebody as arrogant and as haughty as Haman to have that happen to him must have been very upset. Verse 13, so he has another quick powwow this time. And it, just a few hours earlier, he seemed on the top of the world. The Sapper Haman Lazarus Ishto, this time he calls his wife and all his friends as Kolish tells them what happens. So, and he's trying to get advice. And the wise people and his wife tell him, This was very strange. Like, until now, everything had been going his way. And now, all of a sudden, like, very quickly, it seems like the king's, he was no longer the favored one, and Mordechai was in favor. So, these people were very superstitious. In fact, that's why they threw the lots and everything. So, she tells them, it's very interesting, she tells them, you know what, if you're starting to fall from Mordechai the Jew, and he's really a Jew, asher yechilos lidfanav lo sucho, you're not going to be able to overcome it. There's a basic idea like this. If the Jews deserve punishment and Hashem allows you to destroy them, that means that Hashem is on your side because they deserve whatever is happening. But if Hashem has begun to favor the Jews and has begun to answer their prayers, forget it. You've got no hope. And that's what she's... So... had they finished giving advice, they probably would have told him to apologize, to say he was sorry, but he didn't have time really to come up with a strategy. He's busy having this powwow. And the officers of the king come, and they rush him to bring him, Haman, to the party. And the Medrash says that he didn't even have a time to shower yet. So he was still, because this just happened. Asher Asa Esther. So, but they rushed him. As we begin chapter 7, and right away Haman is brought to drink together with Esther the queen. And so now we come to the moment that we've all been waiting for. Esther, and the king says to Esther, Gamba Yom HaShemi. You see, the king really couldn't wait. He says the same thing on the second day. What's your request, Esther Amalka? And I'll for sure give it to you. What do you want? I'm Chatzi Amalka. It's up to half the kingdom to us. So now the moment comes that we're all waiting for. Chapter 7, verse 3. V'tan Esther Amalka v'tomer. And Esther says, Yimatzasi kein beinecha. She says, if I found favor in your eyes, the king, do you like me? You know, Imal Melech Tov. And if you think it's a good idea, Tanusli, you know what? Give me my life. Save my life. And if you like, if my request is my life, and if you want to be really nice, you'll give me my people too. Spare me and my people. Now, why is that? Ki nechmarni anivami, because me and my people have been sold to be destroyed. We've been given over. Like it's been legally done that me and my people are going to have Hashmi destroyed, Haru killed, Aved and wiped out. And she says, you know what? If it was just that we would be sold as slaves, if we would have to work, I wouldn't say anything. Because it wouldn't harm the kingdom. But this terrible thing that this person wants to do to harm us is not good for us. It's not good for the kingdom. It's not good for the king. So Achashverosh is very funny over here. Hamelech Achashverosh. It's interesting. You notice it says Hamelech Achashverosh. Achashverosh. All of a sudden, it's the king Achashverosh. Achashverosh, the king, is speaking. Meaning that here he's hearing from his queen that there's somebody that wants to wipe out a good people. and he doesn't know about it. V'yomer le'Esther Amalka, mihu zeh, who is that? Ve'ezeh who? Who ever heard of such a thing? Who would dare think of such a thing? So it's very funny. What do you mean? He's the one who authorized to wipe out millions. Did he forget that he did that? Or maybe he's done it to so many different people, he doesn't know which one. It's very funny. Like, what is he saying over here? Mi hu zeh, ve'ezeh who? Who is the one? V'tomer Esther. So Esther says, Ish, you know who's responsible for this? A very wicked person. And you know who that is? So the Medrash says she was going to say you. Achashverosh was responsible for it, but she bit her tongue and she said Haman. In other words, Haman was the... Because Achashverosh was the one that gave the ring and agreed to it all. But she said, Ish sarva oyev Haman. Hurrah hazeh. She said, there's a wicked, evil person, and it's this Haman right here, who is the one who wants to destroy me and my people. Achashverosh was pretending he was ignorant of it, or he didn't realize who she was. It's not clear what his defense was. Now, when she says this, Haman didn't know what to say. He got caught by surprise at this moment. And the king, as you remember, he was used to being filled with wrath and anger. But he was so angry that he got up and he walked out. Now that's not good because we don't know what he's going to do. So he was so angry, he went out for some fresh air. He went out to the garden. So the Medrash says that Elijah the prophet had ordered the gardeners to start cutting down some trees at that time, because when the king went out in the garden, he saw his favorite flower bush cut down. And he got even more angry. And he said, who ordered this? And they said, Haman ordered it. Like that there were other things that annoyed him. But Haman is meanwhile left alone with Esther in the palace. Again, it's also surprising. Like the king just left them. Haman amid levakash anafshon. Haman is beseeching Esther. I didn't know. We can do this. Haman was a very sly talker. So he's going to try to talk Esther into having pity on him. Master Malka, Kira, because he saw, as we turn the page 40, he also haram Esa Melech. He saw that the king's anger, he didn't go outside to talk with the king because he realized he wasn't going to get very. The king, when he was really angry, he was just so angry he couldn't even sit still. Sometimes people are so angry that they... like they turn red in the face, and you can't talk to them that. They just need to calm down. So the king came back, and he came back to the party room. And Haman, Medrash says he was begging Esther. Medrash says that the angel like gave him a push, like knocked him over. He was beseeching Esther, please Esther, listen to me. I didn't know. I can solve this. I'll help you. I'll be friends with your people. Whatever he was saying. Meanwhile, he fell over on her couch. They used to eat on couches, like the old Roman pictures where people were sitting on the couches with the grapes like this. So she was sitting on one of the royal couches when and so he falls on the couch, and the king utters the words. He gets even more angry. He says, "V'yomer Hamelach, Hagam Litvush et Hamalcha Ime Babais." He said, "Would you dare to harm the queen in my palace?" What in the world? Like this was like the final thing. Once the king said that, Hadava Yotze Pi HaMelech, the words came out of the king's mouth. Upnei Haman Chafoy. Haman saw that he was. This was like it. Like what he was like. Totally. This didn't look good at all. So the only thing was that the king still was very fickle and still could change his mind if time would go by. So the right person has to come along at the right time. And that's Charvona. Now, it's very interesting. Charvona was on Haman's side until now. He was one of the officers that had helped construct the gallows. But often people in politics, they want to be on the side of the winner. So once they saw that it was going against Haman, now he switches sides. What's interesting is we give him credit because until with this king, he could always change his mind. And until something happens, things were still in a balance. So Charvona came along just at the right time. And let's see. V'yomer Charvona echa minasrisim with Ne'amela. Charvona, one of the messengers in front of the king, he says to the king, he says, look out there. Look. Gam, behold, Hineya Eita Shirasa Haman Lamordechai. Look out there. Do you see that tree? You know why Haman made that big piece of wood out there? He made that to hang Mordechai. You know who Mordechai? Asher Diber Tov HaMelech. He was the one that saved the king's life. And here Haman wanted to hang him, Beveis Haman, and it's standing right there. So the king said, what a great idea. V'yomer HaMelech, Tov, hang him on it. So this was the perfect thing because it was immediate. You know, once you hang him, that was it. He was not... So V'yitzves Haman, and sure enough, they hung Haman on the tree, Ashehechim the Mordechai. So the same tree that he had built, the same piece of wood, in Hebrew the word for wood and tree are the same, eights, that big piece of wood that he had put up, the gallow, I guess, that he had put up for Mordechai, now was used for him. V'chamas HaMelech Shahu, and then finally the king calmed down. And so this was an amazing thing that he was the highest person in the government. He was the one the king trusted the most. And very quickly he fell from grace and we were saved from him. So many people feel that Megillah should have ended right here. You know, this was not the rest of the story because Haman was an evil person and his decrees were still in place. And in those days it wasn't a simple matter to undo the decrees. And so that's what's going to happen at the rest of the Megillah. We'll see what happens afterward. But certainly this is the amazing turnaround, so to speak, where Hashem had saved us from our enemies like Haman, and so too should Hashem save us from our enemies that exist today, and we experience the Hashem saving of the Jewish people. And there's this idea that sadness can turn into times of joy, that Hashem has sometimes there are bad situations, they can change very quickly, that in Hebrew they say Yeshua Hashem Keherafayin, that the salvation of Hashem can happen in the blinking of an eye. And in a certain way, that's what happened here. We're going to see that Purim looked like the worst day possible. It looked like it would be terrible. There would be a mass holocaust. And in the end, it turned out to be a very happy day. And so that's why before Pesach, the Purim is a very important day because it shows the ability to take something that could have been very bad and it turned into a very big salvation. In the end, it's interesting. Not only was it a salvation for the Jewish people, many non-Jews converted because the people, Mordechai, became very prominent. And shortly after this, they were given permission to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash by the son of Ahasuerus, who was actually Esther's son, according to most people. And so the story just turned over, changed over very quickly from the power of Haman to Mordechai and Esther. Stop here.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.